Each year when I led a UU heritage trip from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to Boston for our coming of age middle schoolers, I knew that we would need two bouquets of flowers for the day that we came out here to Concord. The first bouquet would be for Marion Wheeler, one of the oldest, dearest members of this congregation. The flowers were to thank her for giving us a tour of First Parish. Yellow roses are her favorite, by the way. And the second bouquet would be to lay on the graves of our transcendentalist ancestors. For many of our teens, it would be the first time they would ever place flowers on a grave. And at first, they did not understand why we were doing this. What a waste of flowers, some thought. Or, why do we even have to visit cemeteries in the first place? That was until they got to Sleepy Hollow Cemetery and climbed up Author's Ridge. I trust most, if not all of us, have been to Author's Ridge over at Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. It is an easy walk from here. It's just right over there, and it's a pleasant walk, too. As one walks through Sleepy Hollow Cemetery, it's impossible not to be struck by the beauty and the peacefulness of the place. Beautiful mature trees, stately grave markers, winding paths and stone benches make this graveyard a place that you might want to stay for a bit. And then you come to the graves that mean a lot to Unitarian Universalists. After a short climb up a path, the visitor comes to a row of graves bearing the names of the Transcendentalists who were as close to one another in life as they are in death. First one comes to Henry David Thoreau's tiny gravestone, invariably covered with wild flowers and pine cones and other natural offerings. Next to Henry lies Louisa May Alcott, surrounded by her family. Her grave is the only one to have an American flag, thanking her for her service as an army nurse during the Civil War. Beyond Louisa lie the remains of Nathaniel Hawthorne, reported to be a dashingly handsome man and the author of a number of American literary classics, including The Scarlet Letter. Beyond the Hawthorne plot lie the Emersons. Lydian and little Waldo are there, along with various sisters, brothers, aunts, and uncles. And at one corner of the Emerson plot stands a beautiful rose granite stone, the marker of Ralph Waldo Emerson's grave. The teenagers I guided were asked to spend a little bit of time at these graves and then to leave their flower on whichever one felt right. This is as quiet as these teenagers ever got on the trip. When they were standing at our ancestors' graves, they became instinctively reverent. Visiting these graves became for them a form of ancestor worship, ancestors they had never even met. And it was here that we all recognized that we are touched by those who have gone before us, and that our lives will touch those who live after us. Yesterday was All Souls Day, so proclaimed by the Catholic Church centuries ago. All Souls Day stands in contrast to Friday's All Saints Day. All Souls Day is the day in which we remember all who have died, not just those who are deemed saints. It is a day to remember one's ancestors, a day to remember family members and friends who have died, a day to honor all who have gone before us. As plants begin to shed their leaves and flowers die off all around us, we humans naturally begin to think of those loved ones in our lives who are gone. We naturally begin to think of those that we miss. And so we too engage in our own gentle form of ancestor worship, by saying their names and remembering their faces, looking at their photographs and remembering what they did. We too revive the memory of those that we have lost. We too allow the dead to live on through our lives. In a sermon in 1819, Reverend William Ellery Channing told his Boston congregation, "I am a living member of the great family of all souls, and I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me in an ever-enlarging sphere." I'm struck with Channing's description of himself as a living member of the great family of all souls. In this, I read him to imply that there are great many members of this great family who have gone on before him, and just as many who will come and live lives after his is over. He places himself squarely in the small frame of time known as the living. And as a living member, he is clear that his responsibility is to build on the good that others have built and then to pass that good on. He says, "I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-enlarging sphere." In other words, while I am alive, my actions affect everything around me, even beyond my realizing it. Now, lest we think that the good Reverend Channing was simply waxing poetic in his sermons, as some ministers are wont to do, let us look at what was going on in the United States in 1819. Only 5 years earlier, we had repelled the British again, but not before they had burned the White House and much of Washington, D.C. Federalist James Monroe was elected president in 1816 and inaugurated the following January. His Monroe Doctrine would soon make the United States the dominant force in the Western Hemisphere, declaring that European nations could no longer form or hold colonies on our side of the world. But the event that surely prompted Channing to speak about the effects of our actions on future generations was the Panic of 1819. The Panic of 1819, which began in January of that year, was the first major peacetime financial crisis in the United States. Though driven by global market adjustments in the aftermath of the Napoleonic Wars, the severity of the Panic of 1819 was exacerbated by reckless banking practices. Listen to this description and see if it doesn't remind you of what happened to us just a few years ago here in the U.S. In 1819, the United States had issued too much paper currency, driving inflation up. In addition, there had been excessive land speculation, resulting in mortgages being given to people who could not afford them. When the Second Bank of the United States sought to correct its lax lending standards by curtailing new loans, state chartered banks began foreclosing on the heavily mortgaged farms and business properties that they had financed. Panic ensued. The financial disaster and depression caused by the panic provoked popular resentment against banking and business enterprise. Americans, many for the first time, became politically engaged so as to defend their local economic interests. This was 1819, almost 200 years ago, and yet it sounds exactly like what Senator Elizabeth Warren and others, both liberal and conservative, have been talking about for years. History just keeps coming around, doesn't it? William Ellery Channing was not preaching in a vacuum. He was not spouting some untethered theology. He knew that the actions of his day would have effects on other people long after he was dead. We now are the living members of the great family of all souls. Now is our day. Our actions will make a difference for good or for evil. What we do affects everything around us in ever-enlarging spheres, and that is why it is so very important to live with deliberateness and with prudence. A commonly held belief among Native Americans is that the actions of those who are alive today will be felt 7 generations out. Things that we do today will affect our great-great-great-great-grandchildren, just as things that our great-great-great-great-grandparents did affect us to this day. Imagine how we might live our lives differently if we really took this belief seriously. Imagine what different priorities our society might have if it could remember that far back, and if it could think that far ahead. 7 generations back would have us realize that we have been directly affected by the actions of those who now rest peacefully on Arthur's Ridge in Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. 7 generations forward would make us act well for a world that we cannot know, but which will surely be radically different than the one we are currently living in. By living deliberately and with an eye to the future, we can help to ensure that the world future generations will inherit will be one that finds them saying our names in gratitude. It will be one in which those who visit our graves will thank us for what we did in our time. It will be one in which those generations will also recognize themselves as the living members of the great family of all souls. All is connected, past, present, and future. Let us do all we might in our day to affect the world for good through ever-enlarging spheres. So be it. Amen.